Welcome to Create Photography. This is Daniel. In today's episode, I will have a conversation with London-based photographic artist Laura Panic. Renowned for her portraiture and social documentary work, she seeks to explore the complex relationships between subject and photographer. Her work has been extensively exhibited and published worldwide, including at the National Portrait Gallery, the Houses of Parliament, Somerset House, and the Royal Festival, all in London. Her artwork has received much acclaim and won numerous awards, among which are the John Coble Award, Vic Oden Prize, World Photo Press Awards, Juliet Morgan Cameron Award, and the HSBC Prix de la Photographie Prize. She also won the first prize of the portrait singles at the World Press Photo Awards. Laura, welcome to Create Photography. I'm looking forward to speaking with you today.
Thanks, Daniel. I really appreciate you reaching out. I'm excited.
Laura, I'd like to start by reading something from your website. Comment on that a little bit and then ask you a question. So, Laura's remarkable ability to build trust and respect with her subjects allows her to express a gritty vulnerability that is as sincere as it is elusive to capture. So that was the citation from the website. And I have to say, after reviewing your work in more detail, I could not agree more. I know from, personal experience that portraiture, while, I think on the surface we could say seemingly easy, is not easy at all to create the strong portraits. And I was really impressed by the way I was able to engage, with the subjects you have been capturing, really throughout what I've seen from your work. So I thought it was really, really amazing. And so I wanted to ask you, so this was a long-winded intro to ask you kind of maybe how you got into photography and also into portrait photography. And then maybe also, if you then maybe can tell me a little bit about how you went to, build trust with your subjects as you went on your journey.
Yeah, sure. I guess I've always had a real fascination with people. And I studied art and I used to paint and draw. And I saw it as a very meditative and relaxing way to kind of just be very present and kind of escape, I guess, at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I used to draw people on trains. And I grew up with my dad being a photographer, but I never had a strong relationship with him. But I do have some sort of distant memories of being in the darkroom and the studio with him. And he was always, very dedicated to his craft and very much 100% all in. And I remember vividly a conversation with him when I was very young, of him trying to explain how he sees the world and he sees light. And he kind of pointed to something on the table and explained how one side of it was two stops darker than the other side. And he was trying to sort of explain to me that he sees things in light, shape, and form. And I think that's what I really did with drawing and painting. And then I went on to study at St. Martin's and do a foundation course. And it was there that I got to try photography. And it was almost like everything I'd been doing with painting and drawing was just available within a 60th of a second. And it suddenly became really accessible. And I was like, wow, this is so much easier. And so I became very hooked very quickly and very much to the aspect of documentary photography. In particular, kind of conflict photography. And I really became interested in how I could help people or deliver a message or start a conversation. And my mum has always worked in charities and social enterprises. And so I think for me, it was really important to use photography as a way of communicating. And I wanted to veer as far away as possible from my dad's kind of photography, which was fashion. I found it boring and frustrating and inaccessible to me. So yeah, I just kind of became very hooked on this idea of going to places and meeting people and collaborating with people and working in a way that was not just about the craft, but, you know, I wasn't really massively interested in the technical stuff unless it was very analog based, unless it was kind of about loading films in a dark room or seeing what happens when, you know, an image appears. I was very interested in that, but I wasn't really interested in sort of lighting and artificial lighting. And so when I went on to study, you know, then came in this concept of projects, which to me still I find a little bit restrictive, this idea of kind of focusing in on a project. And I began to really understand that I was really interested in bringing psychology into my work. And I think it kind of became clear when I realized that people were unpredictable, and that really fascinated me. And I wanted to photograph something that was uncontrollable and unpredictable and limitless. And I knew that if I photographed a landscape or, you know, something that wasn't human or alive, there were, you know, elements that were, to a certain extent, you know, scientifically, they were going to limit me. You know, the light could only go one way, a mountain can't jump up and suddenly grab you. You know, it's kind
of right.
I wanted something that was going to have a relationship with me, and that we were going to kind of, in a sense, trust each other to make the image. And so I just kind of, I guess, fused together my interest in social psychology and psychology in general and philosophy with photography. And then I began to realize that I really wanted to work with young people. I started it very on in uni, and I just found it really invigorating. And that kind of unpredictability and that human behavior that is just so ungraspable and complex presented itself in just such a finite way when working with people that were of a certain age. And so that's kind of how I carried on. And then I guess with each project, the question that I asked myself is, what can I learn and what would scare me? And the things that came up were things like being naked in front of a load of people, or, you know, accessing a community where they don't want to be photographed, and actually photography is deemed kind of immodest. And, you know, how do I access people that I can't access? You know, as a human being, I'm unfortunately always drawn to things that I can't have or that don't want me. So, that very much has led a lot of my projects. And now I'm kind of thinking more about science and how the psychology of, and, you know, the makeup of our bodies and our brains can kind of affect that dynamic as well. So it's a constant journey of kind of bringing together lots of different interests. So yeah, that's kind of a very long summary thanks. Of my photography.
No, this is great. And it's wonderful. Actually, it's interesting. You preempted one of my next questions, was about unpredictability. I saw you, you know, when preparing for this, one of your online presentations, you talked about this unpredictability. And I'd like to, and you already alluded to this now a little bit in your response, but I'm really actually curious about that. So it sounds like, is it the challenge maybe of part of that with, you know, working with human beings, with subjects, and the camera, or is it, what is it about the unpredictability that you love about, you know, with your work?
I think I just have such a desire to learn. And I think anything that is unpredictable is challenging. And I think that what I like is, what I know I like is the fact that predictability for me often amounts to boredom, and I don't want to be bored. So if something's unpredictable, then I have to kind of navigate it and learn and approach it in a way that is going to be very particular to that situation. And I think, you know, one mantra that follows my life is let go of what you can't control. And I think that that creates some form of freedom, and that freedom usually comes out in problem solving and creativity. So if I know that I'm going to photograph, I don't know, a businessman who works for a bank, you know, I know the elements that I'm in control of, and I know to a certain extent what to expect. example, what I love is when I arrive and something completely unexpected happens, like he has 19 cats or something. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of those elements of surprise that just bring in another conversation or another characteristic or another opportunity to be creative and reveal, you know, something that all makes us kind of unique. So, I'm interested to, you know, I find it's so weird, Daniel, like saying this, but I find people as equally disappointing and boring as I do fascinating and unbelievably unpredictable. So, yeah, for me, it's kind of leaning into the positive of that and and trying to be curious. With that, as curious as possible.
Well, it's interesting what you mentioned about, you know, not worrying about what we can control. And I was curious, actually, have you studied Stoicism by any chance? Because that's a very Stoic mantra as well.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Stoicism, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I've only read two books on it, one main book on it, but I guess it fuses so closely in with so much psychology.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, but it really helps to have an understanding of Stoicism.
Yes.
If you're working in editorial photography.
Oh, I can imagine, yes.
Yeah, I think my personal interest lies in, it became a solution for my anxiety and stress. And when I started, I kind of started shooting very, very early on, as in I was still at university when I was being commissioned. And I had this kind of crossroads where I sort of thought, I'm not ready for this. You know, like I need to go on, I need to assist more, and I need to learn about lighting and all these things. And then, you know, I just kind of went, fuck it, and went for it. Which I'm really glad I did, but at the same time, my goodness, my anxiety was just through the chart, and it came out as anger. It came out as like absolute rage and stress. And you know, the best way for me to deal with that was to really lean into kind of what that was about, and mostly that was about this feeling of like not being able to control anything and not being able to basically capture this vision in my head or do justice to what I wanted to do. And then, you know, you realize that is the drive of being an artist. You always want to paint the picture that you see in your head or create the vision that's in your dreams. And actually you can't, because if you could, then you'd feel this unnerving sense of kind of completion, which never really happens. You know, because if it did, then you wouldn't really have anything to try, you know, and achieve after that. Right. So I think, yeah, it's been like, it's been really helpful to me, and I'm very kind of obsessed to a certain extent with psychology and therapy and exploration of kind of human behavior. So, yeah, that definitely helps when you've got like 15 minutes to do three different setups and you're like, what's the best way to treat this? Actually, instead of stressing the hell out, I'm just going to pretend I'm in a computer game and the clock's ticking and it's fun. And I'm just going to do the best I can do within what I can. So, that's been really helpful for me. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, you know, and a lot of what you now mentioned to me already since we started chatting really makes a lot of sense when I look at your work, where I do feel like, you know, that you can kind of relate to the subjects, and maybe in part it really deals with, it has to do with how you relate to the subjects. And so I'm kind of curious, are you, you know, obviously you've been doing the professional work now for quite a while as well, and do you have now certain, let's say, tricks or certain approaches where, you know, you kind of try to just relate to your subjects, or is it just something that comes naturally to you? Because obviously when you work professionally, you work with all kinds of people, right? And so, and sometimes you may not be able to choose who you're working with.
I think actually it's kind of more, generalizing that in the way that, you know, being a photographer is a lot about your personality. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think there's tricks or processes that I adopt each time. Maybe subconsciously or habitually I do. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that, and I don't know if this is necessarily a good thing, but I'm quite good at kind of just switching into that mode. So if I'm not explaining this very well, but if I'm incredibly, I can think of it in social circumstances as well. If I've just received some incredibly bad news or stressful news, and then I'm shoved into a party full of people, I will just kind of laugh and put on a brave face. I'm quite good at kind of doing that.
Yeah.
Not in an insincere way, just in a kind of way of adapting, I guess, is the best way of saying it. I think that I consciously adapt. And I think that, well, I hope that when I'm photographing, that happens in the way of kind of mirroring people and adapting to what they're interested in, you know, because it's like, I want to be able to connect with somebody and therefore I need to like lean into finding out who they are and being curious. And so I guess, you know, the very obvious things of just asking questions, listening and being interested in other people is what's going to make mm-hmm. people feel comfortable, but also revealing things about yourself that make you vulnerable in terms of, I'm quite shameless and I'm quite happy to, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm quite vulnerable and I will talk about things and not really worry what people think to a certain mm-hmm. extent.
Yep.
And I hope that makes people feel that they can share with me and they can feel comfortable. And I kind of want to sort of do that to pave the way in the sense that if I'm going to photograph somebody in a muddy marshland, rather than point to where I want them to stand, I'll try and jump in there first and show them sort of where I would do it, you know?
Yep.
And in the same way, if I'm speaking to somebody who's been through a trauma, I will happily share my trauma with them in mm-hmm. order to make space for them to feel comfortable that, you know, it's a safe space.
Yep.
So it's not a rule and it doesn't necessarily work, but I believe in it, if that makes sense. I know that I'm definitely more comfortable sharing with people and being vulnerable with people. Or even just making a fool of myself if someone else does, you know, it's just kind of basic, knowledge. So yeah, I think in that way. And I think also, it's kind of, really important for me to be photographed now and again, to remind myself what that process is like. I think I forget, how much patience and tolerance it takes. Because being photographed is not actually just about vanity and feeling insecure. It's also about being bloody cold and bored and being asked to do the same thing again and again and again in a way that you just doesn't feel natural, or wondering what the hell to do with your hands. And so I think it's about thinking, what do I like when I'm being photographed? What helps me? What do I enjoy? So now and again, I ask friends to photograph me, and I find that really helpful.
A little bit going back to your commercial work. So you've been doing the commercial work for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You've been represented, I believe, nationally and also internationally by two different agencies. And
mm-hmm.
we talked a little bit about projects too. So, and I'm kind of curious how do you feel like, and I know this may be a little generic question, but I'm still curious how you're balancing your, you know, kind of personal work with your, you know, with your assigned work, so to say. And do you get to even...
My accountant would say that I'm not.
Okay.
My accountant would say that I'm basically... He actually sat me down the other day and was like, you're spending all of your money on your personal work.
Okay.
You need to stop it. So maybe I don't have a good balance is the answer to that. But
okay.
Mentally and logistically with regards to time, I think that, you know, I try to be proactive rather than reactive. So mm-hmm. I try and plan projects or allocate my time in a way that is probably you know, I'm the kind of person that power hour, you know, I will often spend the morning doing my own thing or seeing my nephew or hanging out with my family. And then I'll spend 2 hours from like 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. just whacking out emails, you know. Sometimes it's not necessary. But then some days I'll be working for 14 hours all day. So it's not, no kind of like consistency in terms of my workflow. Whereas I know other photographers, you know, they will wake up at the same time every day. They will, you know, have a list that they do every day. But for me, it's actually... I like that, you know, one day everything on my list is to do with admin and editing, and the next day it's all out, you know, getting on a train and going to the middle of nowhere. So the best way, I guess, that I've learned to separate the two is to really allocate time for personal work in terms of being away. And I used to think that getting away and leaving the country was kind of the answer in the way of that you have an alien eye, you know, you're looking at things and they're beautiful and different and it's all fresh and inspiring. But actually it's about that space as well. It creates that space where you are literally you're in a different space. You're not in your home. And I think that that really helps me, because I think that I'm definitely, distracted very easily. You know, I could be doing a yoga class and halfway through I'll look under my sofa and be like, I should really clean under there, you know, like it's I'm really you know, I'll be sending one email and I'll have seven different tabs open at the same time and I'll dance between the two. So I like that when I'm away and I'm focusing on a project, my mind is not on commercial work, and if it is it's in my notes on my phone, a list of things that I need to do after my day has ended. But I also like coming home, you know, I'm not, I'm not a nomad. I'm definitely a creature of habit, and I love venturing off for a few weeks and then coming back to my cat and my home and sitting there and editing. So, that balance comes in an intuitive sense of, and a selfish kind of like slightly kind of just self-care way of being like, what do I need? Do I need to, you know, go off for 2 weeks and have some inspiration, and can I financially afford that, and also logistically is it possible? And then it goes into logic, how can I make that work? Okay, financially I can't afford it, so can I work with an organization or an NGO? Can I pitch this to an editorial? You know, can I do some kind of work that's going to fund this? It's it's that balance. So I have consistent commercial things that I've dedicated my time to, which is mentoring. And that for me gives me the flexibility and the freedom to bring in some kind of very basic income. But also I really enjoy it. And I feel that I really give everything to it. You know, I dedicate that not just that time in sessions with people, but also I'm really thinking about, you know, those people that I'm working with outside of those sessions. So I might read something or hear something or see something and I'll be like, right, I need to send that to such and such. and that's a consistency. That's kind of like, okay, that is my bread and butter to a certain extent. And then outside of that, you know, commissions are unpredictable and I'm just basically doing everything I can. To kind of get those commissions. But, you know, I've always, it sounds very like controversial, but I've actually always like majoritively really enjoyed commercial work. Like, what I find difficult about it is the unpredictability and, and the fact that it's so hard to obtain. And I think my work is not shiny, you know, my work is not lifestyle. And I think, the thing that is that usually gets me commissions is actually my personal work, because it's about people and it's about real life and it's about being able to kind of connect with people and to portray emotions and just to be there, basically. So there are certain areas in the commercial world that, you know, my work fits more than others, i.e. healthcare and things like that. But still obtaining that work is not easy.
But it makes sense, right, that your commercial client, that they're really looking for you to kind of do the work, which I don't know if that's correct to call it, but it seems really real, you know, real or, you know, not,
authentic,
I don't know, maybe there are better terms for that, but Yeah, which is great. And if you get to do that for your commercial work, hopefully that's actually nice too.
Definitely. It just goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this idea of helping people.
Yep.
And I would much rather be shooting something for the NHS or, I don't know, anything that's in, a pharmaceutical drug that's like helping people with autism. Right. I'd rather be doing that than I would shooting a lipstick advert.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm curious about you mentioned the mentoring. Does that mean you're mentoring other aspiring professional photographers, or is it any other photographic artists, or is it?
It's people that have reached out to me that have basically there's such a range of kind of things that people want to work on and. All in their own way, they're very successful people. And it's just, for some people, they want to work on the commercial side of things. So they're marketing and reaching out to people and pitching projects and, just increasing their network. Whereas other people want to work on access and, personal project development, or even just, looking at kind of how they're actually shooting and their approach and their style and, all the technicalities of doing things and switching to analog and learning new techniques. So it really varies. And, I've kind of built this program that started during COVID and I'm really sort of learning. I've been doing it about 4 or 5 years now. And I'm just really learning kind of like how the soundboarding and the collaboration can really kind of support people. And it sounds bit extreme, but it's almost like therapy a lot of it, I really connect with a lot of the people that I'm working with, and I feel that we really do go to some really dark places sometimes. but I really want them to feel like this is actually like a lot of it is about our mindset, and our confidence and our approach. And, even something as simple as street photography and photographing strangers, it's all about the narrative that we have in our head. You know, when you walk past somebody and you're like, shit, I should have asked them. That's you, that is you not going 3, 2, 1, I need to do this. And that is also you beating yourself up about it. And then that is you building this kind of like habit of always feeling shit when you don't, and therefore not getting over that fear. And it's like, okay, so how can we break that? Yeah. So. That's a very basic example, but you know what I mean?
It's like, exactly. It's a good example. The voice in our heads, right?
Exactly. And breaking those habits and also gradually like figuring out like some of the things that have come up for people is like realizing that they're actually really hating shooting what they're shooting and they're doing it because they feel they have to. And actually like breaking this idea of having to produce a project has really freed them up. And now they're just going out and taking pictures, and their pictures are better than they've ever been.
Right.
So, and they're just more importantly, they're really enjoying it, and they found their passion again.
Yeah.
And for other people, it's the opposite. It's people that have been producing very finite documentary work, and it's like, how can we loosen you the hell up so that you're not just basically narrating what you're seeing in front of you?
Right.
Can we be a bit more clever? So a lot of that is looking back over inspirations, looking at people that inspire me, introducing people to work that I adore. And it's people that have been students, or it's people that have never done photography and then kind of got into it, or it's people that have been photographers and filmmakers their whole life. So it's a real
it's a whole range. Whole range. And are you working with people globally, or is it something?
It's global. It started during the pandemic, which kind of meant that I really was working with people all over the place
online.
And then I have this option where I basically say to people, we can do either. We can meet in person, or so some people choose to meet 3D. There's one guy I've worked with for about 4 years now, and we still have only met in person twice. He just likes the online kind of he likes it online. It's easy for him and it works well. So it's for me, I am happy with either, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think both have benefits.
Oh, that's cool. So switching gears a little bit, I saw in a video where you appeared that you mentioned that you've been getting a little bit into motion or moving images. So I was curious about that, and maybe if you wouldn't mind telling me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I really resisted it for a really long time. And it was when kind of, I think it was probably when the new Canon came out, it was like the Mark 1 or Mark 2 or something, and you could suddenly do video on, to a really high quality.
Right.
And I just noticed that a lot of my friends and peers were switching and doing moving image. And I was like, this is so different. Like, this is like a gymnast just taking up sumo. It's a different skill set. And then I went to Australia for a project, and I was photographing out there for my project Island Symmetries. And I was working with these young kids, and they must have been from age like 6 to 12. And we were just hanging out, and it was one of those kind of lovely projects where you're basically just, on the road, and you've got 3 weeks, and you're just dedicating your time to seeing what the hell happens, which doesn't happen very often. And I packed my Canon in my bag with no intention of using it whatsoever. And then when I was there, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to see what the video looks like. And I ended up shooting quite a bit of video, and then I brought it back. Didn't really know what to think about it, but was like, I really enjoyed it. I was like, this is really fun. And like, I didn't even have a microphone. It was really basic stuff.
Yep.
And then I was giving a talk, and completely coincidentally, somebody from Ridley Scott came up to me and they said, have you done the moving image? And I was like, absolutely not. And then I sort of said, I did this really shit thing that I just tried in Tasmania. I haven't even looked at it. And they were like, we're going to edit it for you. Let's have a look. So I sent it over and they loved it. And they were like, this is great. Like, we want to edit it. Cool. We think you should do some more. So it kind of built up my confidence and made me think, yeah, I should do this. Yep. And then I was commissioned by Panasonic and BJP to make a film. And I ended up learning that I hate half of it, as in the process. I find it grueling. I hate editing. but actually, more and more I'm exploring it, and not just because those opportunities are coming up, but also I think that it's offering a new skill set and a new challenge for me.
Right.
And I think in the past 2 years, it's been that and shooting large format and more experimental work that has really pushed my patience, pushed my skill set and really challenged me. And I think that's a good thing, I think that we have this very romantic notion that photography is fun and lovely all the time, but actually sometimes you're just like, you want to throw a tripod across the room, you're like, why is it so messy and annoying? I'm enjoying it. And now I'm kind of, this year I'm pitching a few video projects, but it's with people that are used to working in film. Like, there's a girl that I work with in Armenia, and we're putting in applications for funding. And it's just like, if that comes up, I'd really like to do that. And I've learned, in the very little kind of like experience that I have, that my way of shooting is very immersive. And it's like, I just need to be handheld on a rig, and I need to just wander around and just shoot really freely. I'm not a script writer. I'm not a storyboarder. I will have a rough idea of places, locations, and characters, but actually my first stage is just showing up and just hanging out. I have lots of different processes for different projects, but that's definitely my preferred way of working on moving image
with the video. And so you mentioned a little bit, and I've done, a while ago, I've done some commercial work too, and I actually did some motion work, but I was like you, the editing part was just not, I didn't mind the learning part, I loved, but I,
yeah.
So is that for you still kind of the case? The editing is not, can be, first of all, lots to learn, and also, it takes just patience.
It's more the patience. I find it boring. I find it really boring. And I also am not the kind of person, I don't enjoy sitting in front of a screen with other people. I'm okay to do that on my own because I can distract myself now and again. I can take breaks when I want and watch stupid cat videos. But if I'm sitting in an editing suite, I have to stare at a screen with someone else. And it's things like that that I just find really exhausting and boring. It feels like school again. maybe I just need to change my mindset. But it's also right. like, you know, I found somebody that I really like working with, and I really like meeting new people to work with. So I think mm-hmm. a lot of that is about finding someone that, you know, understands your way of working.
Right.
And that means you can skip at least four stages because, you know, right. they're just like, yeah.
Well, they can do what you kind of don't want to do, right? No way.
And what I can't do, yeah.
or can't or don't want to or wouldn't want exactly. to learn maybe or something.
But I mean, commercially it's different, isn't it? Because commercially, like, you have a brief. Like, you're adhering to someone else's desires and their ideas, which is actually a lot easier. You know, at the beginning, I was kind of very precious about that. And I was like, no, this needs to be this. And now I'm like, okay, so I can see what you want. So let's make that. Let's do that. And I'm going to do that in the best way possible. But I'm also going to try this just to see if you like it. Like, you know? I definitely think for me, that's the best way to work, where I kind of like absolutely try and smash it out of the park with producing someone else's vision. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with my own, you know, with integrity, but also I kind of want to bring something else to it. I don't just want to push the button. I want to kind of, say, okay, yeah, this is how I do it as well. And what do you think of this? And I think with director's cuts and things like that, you can definitely do that. So,
Oh, that's cool. Well, I look forward to seeing more of your motion work too. So I think that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. So another topic I want to briefly cover. I learned, you know, that you mentioned that also during our chat already, that you like to use analog for some of your personal work, and you also just mentioned even large format as well. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what attracts you to the analog?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Daniel, I'm quite old and we have digital back in my day. When I was growing up, there wasn't such thing as digital. So I've always been very grateful to just grow up with analog. And like I said, it has a romantic nostalgia with my dad and kind of, you know, I was tipping trays in the darkroom when I was a baby. So I just have a lot of love for analog, but it's also, you know, for me, it's a craft and it's something I can do with my hands. I again love the unpredictability of it. I love the light leaks. I love the waiting and getting the film back. And I'm a born romantic. It's kind of, it just really seeps into everything that I love. But there's also, you know, nothing can really replace it. And I don't just mean in terms of the quality of the image, but I just mean the process itself. But, you know, as I've explained, I'm somebody that multitasks to the point of epitome and gets very distracted very easily. So I like the idea that I can manipulate this craft to work for that, you know. For example, if I know that I need to slow down and talk to somebody, I'll change a role, you know, because whilst I'm changing that role of film, I can do it with my eyes closed so I can actually talk to someone rather than just have a camera up in front of my face the whole time. Right. So I think that it's that the pace of the process really works for me. And it's also the lack of reviewing means that I can just be present. And I don't have the discipline to shove a bit of gaffer tape over my camera. I don't see the point. You know, if I'm working on digital, just because, I don't know, I decide to kind of, not look at the image doesn't mean that I can't. And I think actually that's sort of cutting your nose off to spite your face. And it's about using the elements of the craft that are going to enhance the process. So with digital, you know, for me, that I can see the image straight afterwards is actually an opportunity to maybe make somebody feel better because they can see the image and they go, hey, I'm really happy with that. And likewise, you know, the opposite. If someone wants to see the image and I'm like, nope, it's not getting there, I can be like, sorry, it's shot on film. So I also feel like I have much more of an interest in learning analog. Like, I want to learn all the different processes. I want to know what happens when you, you know, change this and change that. But I'm not obsessed with the technical.
Right.
And that doesn't drive me. It just, I find it fun, you know? Yep. And the minute it stops being fun is when it becomes too scientific and technical for me. And so that's, you know, learning too much about lighting or learning too much about the rules of kind of distance and focal length and all these things. Actually, I just quite like sort of, you know, sticking to one lens, usually sticking to a medium format camera, and just treating it like a box rather than, going into the kind of the digital craziness, basically. You can hand me a camera that feels and looks like an analog camera and works digitally. I'll happily use it. Save me a lot of money.
Right. And so with your film work, is this, are you actually processing your own film, or how
with the black and white? I do.
Okay.
Well, mostly when I have time. When I can't be bothered. Although saying that, I was really annoyed because I messed up a whole bunch of black and white film, and since then I've been quite scared to. To do
that's
it myself.
Always, that's
really
that's,
heartbreaking when that happens. And then I have a lab that I trust and I use, and it's quite nice because they scan the way that I know that they scan, and do you know what I mean? It's quite and then when I'm doing high res scans, I just do them myself.
So we're recording this interview in January 2023.
Yeah.
And many of us, not all of us, but some of us have New Year's resolutions. So I was just kind of curious, you know, if that's something you're even contemplating, or if you have any, or if you're not into that.
I feel like I have a New Year's resolution every day.
Okay. it's even better.
I really enjoy doing is planning stuff to look forward to. That's really important. But if I was to choose, like, does it have to be photography related?
No. Is that so funny? That was my next question. What are you looking forward to in 2023?
Yeah. I think maybe my New Year's resolution is to look forward to more things, like plan more stuff to look forward to. And take more risks. Take more risks. And what I'm looking forward to, I'm doing a project with some scientists, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where on earth this goes, because it's been like 3 years in the making.
Oh, wow.
And it's not really going anywhere.
So
I'm kind of looking forward to seeing, like,
what's going to happen there?
What's going to happen?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I'm looking for. And I'm looking forward to, like, seeing my, I feel like, I don't know, I spent the day yesterday with my mom, my sister, and my nephew. And do you know, when you just have that moment, like, we were all hugging goodbye in the street. We were just, like, in my hometown, like, suburbia. And we were, like, outside a shopping center. And as we hugged, you know, it was just this, like, moment of love and joy. And the stranger was, like, next to us, and he was just like, oh, you guys. And it was that, like, that's what I'm looking forward to, is like more family time,
just moments like that.
Like, I'm very close to, like, my mom, my sister, and my nephew, and I think it's just really, like, he's just turned sort of like 1.5, and I think, so I'm looking forward to, like, seeing him grow up this year. Say more amazing shit.
Nice.
So
Great. Yeah, like what you said.
What about you? What are you looking forward to?
You know, this is a good. I don't really have a major New Year's resolution at this point, but I kind of like what she said, to just maybe sometimes it's just the little things, right, that you just have to enjoy and just not worry about the bigger, you know, whatever we worry about, right? The voices in our heads. So a little bit of I don't know, it probably doesn't answer the question, but I like what you said, and I think, you know, just enjoying the moment and the not, you know, I think that's something it's always what I'm striving for. And, doesn't always work out so well, but
but, like, putting things into perspective and just being
for sure. Speaking, so we spoke a little bit about projects, and you have really an impressive body of work, So have you thought about ever publishing some of your work as a, or maybe you have, or maybe I missed that, as a book project?
Yeah, so I'm actually working on a book at the moment that we hope should be out this year at some point. And that will be my project, Youth Without Age and Life Without Death, which is a project based in Romania. Okay. It's kind of, it's been, you know, it sounds really naive, but I've never really had the agenda of making a book with any of my work because I don't know, it just never feels, I don't know, I just haven't. I've always held off from it. And then in the past sort of like, 8-10 years, books have just exploded and they're kind of like, you know, every university student has published a book by the time I finished. And I was like, okay, yeah, maybe I need to do a book. And actually I began to sort of like, in the way that I kind of see most things is, you know, you have a thought in your head and you're like, okay, but I'm just going to like be open to that, but I'm not going to do it unless it feels right. And then a publisher approached me and I met with them and they literally around the corner from where I live. And I really just like them. I think they're really cool. And they were just really, I don't know, they've just got a good vibe and I'm really enjoying working with them. And they were like, this won't cost you anything. And we will publish it and it will be great. And I was like, brilliant. Okay, perfect. And it's just been, quite an easy process. So that's really nice. And definitely like, I don't know. I've been thinking about the Island Symmetries work and how that could actually be a really interesting book. And it could be really playful and there could be really interesting ways of presenting that work. Even though I shot it so long ago. So it's actually old work that I'm looking back on and I'm like, maybe that would make a good book. But I think books are kind of, I don't know, they're a bit of a vanity project really, aren't they? So it's, I'd have to think about why I was doing it. And, and I think like for both of these, it's about creating an object. So yeah, I think it's, it's about sort of, I guess kind of making the work into something new, which I like the idea of, like it not just sitting on a screen or in an exhibition.
It seems like it's definitely a creative process, but I can also see how it's not a trivial process, I'm sure, right? And we have to think about the sequencing and all these things and the many things,
Yeah, and the
binding and all that, like weird stuff.
I mean, the biggest thing is just the scanning. Like, man, because I shoot everything on film, it's like Like,
Also, you have to go back and scan some of those.
Yeah, okay, I see. Everything. Yep. So, and it's like Romania was probably about 5 years, you know, or maybe less, maybe 4 years. So, it's kind of time consuming. But Christmas was a really good time for that. You know, I just literally went through and went through all my necks. And so everything is done low res now, which is great. It's a mission.
Then you'll have to do the high res, I presume.
For the, First, we're doing the small prints, the small prints layout. And then,
Got it. Cool. So are you thinking, is Laura, is that going to be this, so this year?
Yeah, exactly.
Coming out? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. We're hoping, we've done the edit now. So we're hoping to print in March. So
then it will be, nice.
It's very quick.
That's very quick. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, good. Well, I think, so we're at the hour and I also want to be sensitive to your time, but one last, hopefully simple question is, where can people best find you online?
I was going to say, if that's online, it's different to where can they find me? Because it'll probably just be like snuggled up with my cat at home.
Oh, yes. right.
Yeah,
we don't want to give away the address.
You're welcome around, Daniel. You can come for a cuppa, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm quite lucky that my surname's quite unusual. So I'm just Laura Panack. I just keep it very simple. So P-A-N-N-A-C-K. And that's my name on Instagram, on Twitter, on everything.
And the website is like that too?
Yeah, exactly. .com.co.uk. Yep. Yeah. And I'm kind of, I try and post an image and a story every Thursday. That's my kind of
nice
routine. I hardly ever stick to it. But yeah, I used to post that on my website, which I still do, but it's easier to post on my Instagram. So
yep.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, great. Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed speaking with you. I think it was a lot of fun. Learned a lot. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks so much, Daniel. And, you know, I hope we can meet 3D one day. And
yeah, that would be really nice. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. This wraps up our episode with Laura Panic, London-based photographer. Please check out her work at laurapanic.com. It's PANNACK. You can also find her on Instagram or Twitter under the same handle, Laura Panic. Thanks so much for listening, and talk to you next time. Mm-hmm.